Welcome to episode 383. Do you live near Wi-Fi towers, use a laptop all day, or leave the Wi-Fi on at nighttime? All of these things produce EMFs, electromagnetic fields, that can be damaging to your biology. And further to the material things that produce EMFs, maybe you're also in a relationship that's hard work, maybe you have a workplace full of grumpy people, or you have a lot of your own negative traumas and memories. All of that can also produce negative energy that harms your biology. On today's episode, we talk specifically about how ancient Chinese modalities of energy management and medicine can be used to create tools and jewelry items for both men and women that you can wear that help strengthen your body against all of this negative energy. This episode opens up a conversation that you might never have thought about, but one that affects anyone with a PowerPoint in their home and an internet connection. So let's dive in.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? Another How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast arrives in your ears today, and we're going a little outside of the box on this one. But first, though, in 2024, it's my mission to coach 500 people to get control of their sugar cravings and sugar binges so they can stop yo-yo dieting, stop obsessing about food, and finally create a body that they feel confident being in. And the links to transform your health and add more productive years to your life are down in the show notes below if any of that interests you. Now, in the time that we've been getting ready to do this podcast, it's been a couple of months, but we're about to step outside of the box and have this conversation. I want to introduce you to fellow Aussie, Daryl Mitchell, who is the founder of Zenki Bangles and Rings. He brings over 30 years of experience in clearing energy from homes, businesses, and land, as well as an extensive experience with traditional modalities of Qigong, Reiki, kinesiology, Feng Shui, and Bowen therapy. You might be thinking, how does this relate to jewelry with bangles and rings? Well, Zenki rings and bangles are a unique piece crafted from copper that are blessed and tuned with advanced Qigong techniques. Why? Well, they're designed to protect you from electromagnetic fields or EMFs, from Wi-Fi, power lines, electrical devices and of your phone and laptop, as well as other people's negative energy. And I'm actually wearing two of these copper pieces right now, and I have for the last couple of months. And in today's conversation, we're going to get an understanding of how this technology works. And well, it's actually been around for a very, very long time. And it's probably needed now more than ever in this highly electrified atmosphere that we have going on. And Daryl's here to introduce us to all of this. So Daryl, welcome to the show.
Maddie, what a great introduction. Thanks very much.
Oh, you are so welcome. I'm excited to have you here. And I know that this is a new world, this podcasting world, but you've got experience of being on radio back in the day.
A long time ago, Maddie. A long, long time ago. But I'm not a stranger to teaching and being in front of people, so this is okay.
Yeah, amazing. So I guess the place I want to start, like I want to learn a lot about you, but I know that the idea of protecting energy is initially going to hit some people with the, oh no, is this a bit of a woo-woo? Like what is going on here? So I just want to just nip it in the bud straight away. Like what do you mean when we're talking about protecting people's energy or protecting us from other people's energy?
I think the language has to be clear. It's really about not so much from protecting against anything, but rather enhancing our biofield so that we have more resistance against these everyday stressors. And in modern times, of course, we've got EMFs everywhere. And the only way to be free of those is to live in a Faraday cage. And no one's going to do that because it means nothing would work. So really it's saying, okay, we've got the conveniences of modern technology. We have our mobile phones, our televisions, and everything like that. So how do we integrate those into our lives and not have those cause excess stress in our energy field or our, if you like, our personal chi? Now, this is interesting too, because our ancestors, even in the 1980s, they were talking about this with electromagnetic fields, saying that the background radiation now is a million times more than it was for our ancestors. And so in some sense, given that the, if you like, the electrical system in the brain operates in millivolts, in thousands of a volt, suddenly we're around all of this exposure. So there's two things involved. One is the strength of those fields and you know, to be prudent to stay away from exposure to, you know, really, really high tension power lines if you can and meter boxes and those types of things. But the other is also, if you like, the information in those fields. And this is something that probably borders into the quantum science field about the subatomic information. And Qigong, in its understanding, talks about that. It talks about that there's an energy behind these things in anything. So if something's blessed, for example, it might have this subatomic information of something that resonates at a higher frequency than the same object over here that's not blessed. And so physically they look the same, but if someone's sensitive or they can use other skills like kinesiology or dowsing and these types of things, they can sense the difference between them. So the idea is, how can we enhance our energy rather than resist against things? We really want to sort of boost our ability to cope.
Yeah, right. You said in there that the resistance or the electromagnetic field or energies are a million times more than our ancestors. That's a lot.
That was a report back in the 1980s when I think there was a huge document that came out because there was, they brought experts from overseas, et cetera. They were going to put the power lines in Punt Road above ground and eventually put them under the ground. And they brought experts for and against the effect of electromagnetic fields, of course, right? So, but there's two things involved in this. One is the strength of the fields and one is the information in the fields. I mean, in kinesiology years ago, we were demonstrating that even the photons from a torch would cause a stress response when shining at the thymus, which is, you know, part of your immune system. And so it wasn't the strength of the fields. It was like, well, there's two things here. One is be prudent in your exposure, which we all have to do, given that we've got Wi-Fi and phones and computers and everything, right? Driving in cars that have little generators or alternators. But also then maybe it's not just about that. Maybe there's information at the subatomic level that maybe needs to be rewritten. And I think that's where the idea of tuning something or having blessings or having these particular energy devices comes in.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's a number of people. I actually, for a short period of time, I worked at a functional medicine clinic, and that's where I experienced working with my first couple of patients that had a sensitivity to EMFs and that they were significantly debilitated on a daily basis by walking around in a city or simply being close to Wi-Fi routers. And it's interesting too, because we can't see it and most people can't consciously feel it or sense it, modern medicine and sort of the average person kind of just throws it out with the bathwater and says, ah, that's ridiculous, that's nonsense. But if it was a million times more in the 80s, that was before Wi-Fi. Imagine where it's at now.
This is true. And it is the case where if people can't touch it, can't see it, don't see a formula for it, and they don't necessarily feel it impacts their life right here, right now, well, they're busy. They're doing other things. And I think part and parcel of having this is not to try and convince people that these are a problem. And my whole focus isn't EMFs. It's really about lifting the biofield and through other practices, you know, meditation, Qigong, whatever, lifestyle, talking about, you know, eight pillars of wellness and things like that. So it's not just EMFs. It's a small matter to me. It's just an aside for how can we live our best life? How can we elevate our energy to live our best life and thrive in society? And we really need to be looking at things like EMFs. And part of that is saying, well, in the language, we don't really protect against things like this, right? Because if you actually protect against EMFs, you have to shut them out altogether. There's no protecting against them in that sense. And people say, who say you can protect against them, well, maybe they're not really understanding science. I mean, unless you live in a Faraday cage, you can't do that. So it's really, again, about enhancing your biofield, your qi field. This is the language you use out of China and out of Qigong, is that, you know, our bioenergy field. And it's a very sensitive thing. And as you were talking about with clients that had a huge sensitivity to EMFs, I knew a lady that would turn gray every time she went near power lines. And some people are hypersensitive. Now, obviously, there's other factors in their life, and it may be, well, their immune system's overburdened. Who knows what's going on at the biochemical level for these people too. It's not just the fact that they're really sensitive antennas to EMFs. You know, we have to look at this as a holistic way to say, okay, what's the attitude here? What's the lifestyle? How are they functioning in everyday life that now they're really sensitive to these fields? Because, I mean, that's a huge burden to have if you're just always sensitive to EMFs. How do you survive in modern times, right?
Yeah. Well, the other thing that comes to mind is that the speed at which we have transformed the industrial world means that we possibly have generations of people that just haven't had enough generations to actually adapt to this environment. So it's kind of no surprise to me that whether it be other people's energy just on top of, you know, electromagnetic exposure, whether it be from laptops or computers or power lines or Wi-Fi, and then add in other people's energy, add in, you know, the largest population the Earth's ever seen. It's no surprise to me, if I think biologically about it, that we're not adapted to dealing with that.
I don't think we are adapted to it. There are people who are really concerned about being well, you know, and they're looking at their attitude and lifestyle, which for me are the two main factors, other than some genetics and a few environmental poisons. I mean, how we think, how we, you know, am I well? Am I being well, or am I postponing it in becoming well, et cetera? And what's my lifestyle? You know, am I drinking and smoking and doing all the things that I want to do and then complaining I'm not well? So we sort of have to look at around a picture here. But I don't think we're adapted to these stresses, and I don't know if we can. I know from feng shui, talking about qi that flows through the earth from the Oriental perspective, they would say that if you're exposed to a negative environment where the qi is negative, and of course there's very positive environments too, but if you're constantly exposed to that, then the body initially throughout the day deals with that. It throws it off, right? So you might have, say you're sleeping in an environment that's not so positive. It could be underground currents or something like that, right? The qi is not so good. You might go to work and within 2 hours, your body's back to normal. But if you're constantly in that environment, then the body's ability to adapt to it starts to lessen, and suddenly it takes 3 hours to throw it off, 4 hours to throw it off. And eventually you're 24/7 where your system is being drained. And there are people who are constantly fatigued. So we could look at things like chronic fatigue and those sorts of things and say, well, maybe it's not just the stresses of normal life, whether it's relationships or work or what they're eating and drinking, but maybe there's other factors here. And from a holistic approach, we have to look at that. And working in the clinic, we had to look at that years ago when we were doing kinesiology too, that environmental stress came up as a factor for people. And, geomagnetic lines and geopathic stress was a term that was used a lot. So it's not just about what you're drinking and eating. That's important, of course, right? But it's about these other sometimes subtle, unseen things that are slowly, slowly chipping away.
Yeah, I've noticed too in the space of sort of holistic health and wellness over the last few years, and particularly being in a city, you know, Melbourne, which can be quite cold and damp if we think more of that sort of traditional Chinese medicine thinking, we've seen a big explosion of building biologists, which is that other idea that, you know, our environment, and they often consider, you know, EMFs as part of the conversation and energy and the position of the building and how light falls on the building and how that pertains to your health and wellness. And I think as well, particularly bad in Melbourne is mold, going back to that environmental stress that you might not be able to see. You might find it, but sometimes it's in the carpet, sometimes it's in the walls. But this explosion of building biology is probably a very necessary thing, because we're building the capitalist, you know, rapid capitalist gain as opposed to optimal human health.
Yeah, that's a good couple of lines. That's true. And possibly in the past, our ancestors, firstly, they didn't have electromagnetic fields to deal with. They didn't have the population and the demands and the stresses of modern living to deal with. So when all these things start heaping upon us, it is really, you know, the straw that breaks the camel's back. And I think we have to look at the particular, not just the general, in our lives. And that's why we now might be looking at allergens more particularly than we ever did, et cetera. What are we reacting to? And not just reactive to what we're ingesting or what we're breathing or what's in the air, what we're brushing against, but we're reactive emotions now. We're reactive in many other ways too. So we're in many ways hypersensitive, and maybe we don't have the resilience. We talk about evolution in the sense that we say, well, we evolve and we get stronger and we adapt. And that's probably true. And there are conversations about that to say that if you brought your ancestors from 200 years ago in here, that they'd die in no time because of the pollutants in the air, et cetera. Maybe that's true, but maybe they were stronger in many ways too. To certain things that we're more fragile about, the quality of the air now, the soils, et cetera, the waters, maybe it's not as pristine as it used to be. We're having to adapt to that. And I don't know whether we actually do really well adapt to that.
Yeah, that's such an interesting idea, because I think it's common for us, you know, holistic health people to romanticize our ancestors a little bit and be like, they were absolute savages. They were so strong. They could do anything. But the idea that their livers maybe were not conditioned to actually cope with the amount of toxins that we're introduced to now. Yeah, I wonder if that is an adaptation, or actually our livers have always just been that strong.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I would posit that I don't think the ancestors would adapt. I think in some sense there's there's an intelligence in our system that's constantly striving to be the best it can be, and therefore it's constantly striving to throw off those things that are annoying it and that are toxifying it too. We're not sitting still. We're adapting. You know,
yeah.
We learned this in kinesiology. We learned it through sciences like Qigong, that, for example, if you're in a desert and the only water you can get is really muddy, terrible-looking water, as long as it's not completely poisonous, your body, if you were there with a kinesiologist, and they'd test up that would be your priority because you needed to survive. But if you filled it that water, your body would say, no, I don't want that now. I want the filtered water. And so it's always going for the highest thing, and eventually it would be spring water, mountain water, maybe energized water. Maybe that's flowing little eddies and ebbs and flows in nature that Victor Schauberger talked about. Water is energized by sunlight movement in nature. Maybe we would go to that end then and completely reject the water that was dirty. So I think there's an intelligence in our system that's constantly striving to be the best it can be, and given the opportunity, it will jump to it.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and then that opens a whole can of worms for the mind pollution that everybody gets pumped into their brain through social media, distracting them or numbing their senses from seeking out the highest possible form of food, water, energy, you know, land, grounding, whatever it is. And it's like, you know, this information we consume dumbs us down. So it seems like fast food's a better option than, you know, the organic produce.
Oh, that's true. But there, as you know, there's a huge movement and around the world for people constantly striving to be the best they can be. And a lot of good educators now and motivators in these fields. And I'm an optimist that we will get there. You know, if we look at the science, you go, no, you can't be much of an optimist. You think we're overpopulated, we're using up all the resources. I don't want to think that. I'll stick my head in the sand and go, no. But I have some sort of faith that we'll get there. You know, as much as it's always, oh, in my day we did do that. You know, and we talk about the kids and now I don't know if my kids will ever get there, but they're the new brain. We may not understand them, but in some sense I feel they can be geniuses in many ways. I look at it from being a musician in the past, and I look at how there's so many young musicians who are just exceptional already. Same with athletes. I think we're constantly evolving on all levels, and I have faith we'll get there, that we'll deal with this and we'll find solutions.
What kind of musician did you used to be?
Well, I was a rock guitarist, and I don't play live, but I still record and I still play. It's one of the strings, you know, one of the strings of my bow. I'm passionate about
amazing living,
Maddie.
Yeah, well, I spent about 17 years as a session drummer. So.
Well, fantastic. We'll have to get together.
Absolutely. We're going to have a jam. How did we end up in these fields?
Well, that's right. And I was thinking about that today. You know, I think this is a question that many of us will ask, that sometimes you just stop and go, how did I get here? It wasn't planned.
Yes.
You know what I mean? We talk about these things and people say, well, have a 5-year plan and you'll get here. Sometimes you just stop and go, where am I? How did I get here? It's suddenly you
totally.
Do. You turn left, turn right, go ahead, you know, walk backwards, go forward, open a door, suddenly you're here.
Oh, absolutely. And there's that adage that, that old adage that people say, oh, this wasn't my plan. And then you ask them about the plan and they never actually had a plan. It just wasn't for everything to go to shit.
That's right. That's right. It wasn't just for everything to go to shit. They were hoping they would get there in the end by flipping a coin. That's like,
yeah.
You know, you have to be prepared. It's that idea that, you know, you can't just sit and wait for life to happen. And this is the understanding in feng shui too, that you can do all the best feng shui you like in a house, but the strongest chi in a house are the people. And so the people need to take those opportunities. I mean, that translates to many avenues in our lives. But being well is certainly one of them. You know, I'm very much about being well, not becoming well. I remember a friend of mine, one of my students years ago, actually, who was a friend. And I always would say to her, how are you doing? She would say, oh, getting better and better. And I would say to her, well, that implies you're never well. It's like, you know, when people ask me how I am, I say I'm fantastic. And sometimes they look at me like I've got two heads. And the reason I do it, one, is to put that information in my cells. So I owe it to me to say, look, you're fantastic. You're wonderful. And also I want to lead by example. I want that to be what I do every day. I don't want to say, oh, thanks for asking how I am. Now that you're asked, oh, my leg's fallen off. And you know, people aren't asking for that reason.
I like that. Programming yourself to be always positive, always happy, always amazing. Because it's kind of like that NLP idea, right? Which is the word choice that you use is programming your reality. And especially in the Australian culture, not bad, not far. You know, it's never what I actually am. It's what I'm not.
It's what I'm not. I think we probably inherited that from overseas, actually. I saw a comedian talk about that. I won't mention where from. But he was funny. He talked very much about that. How are you doing? Oh, not bad. Could be worse, you know.
That had to be Carl Barron.
Might have been. I'm not saying. But that's my attitude. My attitude very much is I didn't start being well, Maddie. I started as a sickly kid with bronchial asthma and allergies. You know, out of 32 tests, I was allergic to 29 or something, covered in hives. And so I wanted to be able to say I was well. You know, I had to climb out of the swamp, sort of, you know, dust myself off and get walking and breathe good air and be well. So I wasn't born with that privilege. It was something I earned in a way.
Yeah. What caused that? Like you were born that way, or what triggered those experiences for you?
Oh, I think possibly I was born sensitive, and I don't mean that just from allergens. I was always sensitive to energies, if we can use that term, like a lot of my Qigong teachers are and I am. And I could tell whether if there was disharmony in the home, that even if I couldn't hear it, I could feel it. So I think I was hypersensitive, and that served me well now, but it didn't serve me well when I was young. And I was very, very sick, you know. So, but I'm strong. I've got a strong mind and I'm very positive about I'll be okay.
Mum, mother, grandmother, nan, nana, and women with no kids. Have I got your attention? So I want you to imagine something. Go with me here. Imagine a life where even when you wake up tired and the kids are driving you mad and work sucks and things are problematic, that you're still in control of your food and you still make healthy choices without giving up and binging on chocolate and wine and saying, I'll try again tomorrow. It might be hard to imagine, but having freedom with your food is absolutely possible. And it starts by getting three things right. One, having a supportive community, building a strong connection with fellow emotional eating warriors. Two, having the right information delivered in the right way. And three, having a guide that can shine a light on the right path and have your back along the way. And that's me. Those three things are exactly what we've got for you inside the Healthy Mums Collective Facebook group for people just like you wanting to end their emotional eating and feel good in their own skin again. And currently, it's free to join. The link is in the show notes below. If you've struggled with diets or felt powerless around food, you're not alone. But let me assure you, this is a community that understands your battles and is ready to empower you into action. So what can you expect on the inside? Well, we have posts and content that push you a little out of your comfort zone. We do Facebook Lives, have interactive Q&A session, and it's simply a safe space to face your food challenges and be honest without concern of being judged. If you decide to join us, I have a complimentary How to Turn Food into Self-Confidence ebook for you as well, completely free. The Healthy Mums Collective thrives on support, authenticity, and experience-based practices. It's a community, so the beautiful people in it is where the magic comes from. To join us and be a part of that magic, head to the show notes, click the link, breeze through a few quick questions, and you'll be in the Healthy Mums Collective before you know it. Again, the link is in the show notes below. I'll see you in the DMs or on the welcome post in just a few moments. Yeah. I'm curious, as sort of a, you know, just to give an understanding to everybody, like, what is Qigong and how did you get into it? And how has that helped you recover your body?
Yeah, Qigong is two words, qi, which literally means air or breath, but it also means vital force, this animating energy that the Chinese would say is everywhere in the universe, and there's different qualities of it, and we want to only work with that which is of the highest quality, right? So that's another conversation. Gong means skill or work. So literally you could say it's breath work or the skill of working with qi. Now, the word gong, we would talk in the old days, we used to say kung fu, right? Because that was the sort of Wade Gillies interpretation of Chinese language. But in pinyin, it's gong fu, G-O-N-G-F-U, and fu means time. So it's skilled time. So anything, so someone we think of gong fu as martial arts, but actually it's any skill that's developed over time. So I remember one of my teachers said to me, my Qigong teacher says, you have deep gong fu. And I had to understand what that meant. I had to have that explained to me because it meant that your skill and understanding of working with qi is good. You know, it's very good. And they would apply that to a master calligrapher, for example. So Qigong, to try to get to your answer to your question, Qigong for me came out of martial arts. I was doing Taekwondo. I was studying some of Bruce Lee's Jeet Kune Do. You know, I couldn't study in person. He was gone before I was around. But I was interested in the, you know, I was inspired by the David Carradine Kung Fu series on TV years ago. And I love that idea of the monk who was a healer, but also he was strong martial artist. But there was this real good balance there between the two. And it wasn't just kicking and punching, which is what we sort of learnt when I did Taekwondo. It was mainly kicks and punches and sparring. There was nothing really holistic in that. And I did that and I loved it. It was fun. It was good for me and good for my health. But I was interested in chi. I was interested in this subtle force. And I remember Bruce Lee could do a one-inch punch and I wanted to learn how to do that. And when I did and I did it and I actually practiced and I did it once successfully, I never did it again because I never fully understood it. I thought it could be dangerous. And so I dropped doing martial arts because I was becoming more monk-like. And my interest was, what is this thing called chi? And, you know, I used to get every martial arts mag for a tiny little article about chi. And eventually my inquiry led me to Qigong, which is in Tai Chi, and understanding what that is. And Qigong's 3,000 to 5,000 years old, and Tai Chi's 800 odd years old. And the founder of Tai Chi was a Qigong master, martial arts master, et cetera, right? So my interest was, what is this thing? And I was led to that through my love of feng shui, studying feng shui and Qigong together. And so my many trips to the Orient were to seek out the proper teachers, to find them, knock on their door, pester them, see if I could study. And that's what I did over time. And so I learned very quickly that what I thought was good chi wasn't, and I had to develop it and learn the techniques. And there's three primary things in it, which is mind, breath, and movement. And each of those is huge. I mean, mind, they say there's the mind secret, the mouth secret, and the body secret. The mind secret being how you think, and particular mantra, for example, particular words that have a chi effect, which, you know, you see in Buddhism and other things too. We understand mantra. The body secret might be, the mouth secret rather is the utterance of those particular things out loud. The mind is visualizations as well. And the body secret might be particular mudra, hand positions, et cetera, for energy to flow in certain ways. Now, this knowledge comes out of the Orient and comes out of India and out of China. These sort of long, these cultures that have been around a long, 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 long time and had a chance to develop these things. And the way I look at Qigong is 3,000 to 5,000 years old. If it was rubbish, it would have got tossed out a long time ago because the Chinese were very pragmatic about their stuff. I mean, if you were a physician for the emperor and you didn't do it well, that wouldn't work out for you too well, right? So they tried and tested a lot of things over the centuries. And we're recognizing the effects of acupuncture and Qigong now. There's enough study of it. It's certainly not known like it is things like yoga or other disciplines. You know, they're the catchphrases right now, mindfulness, yoga, et cetera. But a lot of people are starting to get into Qigong because of its simplicity. It can be very, very simple. But for me, the mind, breath, and movement, it meant that my busy brain could come back to just breathing, come back to being still, this idea of mindfulness, being centered. And I do this every morning. So I do what's called emotionless Qigong, where I do a meditative form, where I'm breathing, doing some visualizations, some utterances. You know, sometimes I'm mumbling something. but that has given a nervy child like me, who started off as a nervy, sensitive child, is giving me a good center. The martial arts, the yang end, if you like, was good for my discipline and for having the bead in the eye, that concentrating power. And the other end of the beam, the yin end of the beam, which is that breathing and being still and mindful, to sort of calm the spirit. So in many ways, that's been good for me. And that's aside from my nutritional journey that I had to do as well. But it gives you some brief on my journey with that.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. I really loved hearing that. And I think wrapping my head around, because in this world, I'm very much a student as well. That's definitely not my area of expertise. But I had some acupuncture this week. I really love acupuncture and TCM. I actually had an exam on TCM this week and very proud to say that I got 98% on that exam.
Oh, well done.
So I know a couple of things, but I'm very much a student still. But I guess I'm really curious in regards to the copper, the Zenki, you know, rings and bangles that you create to help people, you know, improve their own energy and strengthen themselves against some of these impeding forces. What's the relationship between the Qigong and the skill set that you've developed and how you can create the copper or develop the copper in a way that makes it more attuned to the individual or maintains its ability to do that work?
Yeah, this is an interesting one because it's not unusual in cultures like China and in India to produce items that are blessed and that are tuned to resonate with particular frequency. Now, this is not common knowledge in the West. We because we're E equals MC squared oriented over here, we don't necessarily understand the logic of this, but if we sit with it, and my thing is to say to people, look, I'm not here to convince you of anything, but if you have the humility or the openness to look and learn and you want to just take the time with this, you might discover something fantastic, right? So it's not about saying, well, this is my way, this is the only way. It's about saying, look, there are old skill sets here that have been around a long, long time, and it's not uncommon. For example, in India, they produce these copper plates that have particular yantra designs on them, and a yantra is a mathematical design, certain things like a mandala, that idea of some geometric design. So some of this is sacred geometry, the maths of sevens and nines and Fibonacci and the golden ratio and the golden mean. So some of it's the science of the maths of nature, if you like. But it's also another factor, which is this esoteric factor of connecting to something primordial, something pure, something still. You could say it's the zero point, the God point, this pure place where, if you like, where yin and yang come together to form this whole place, what's called the Wu Qi, which contains everything and nothing. There's a place that human beings can come to. You can't come to that by thinking. We have to come to that by being still and breathing and meditating and spending time in these practices. So it's possible, for example, to create a positive Qi field. A Qi field is, you could say, Qi is diluted through in the atmosphere throughout the universe. This is the way the Chinese look at it. They say the human mind has a special quality of Qi. So if I'm talking to you, my Qi's touching you. If I'm thinking of an apple, my Qi's touching that apple. My mind energy's touching it. So what that says is also that we can reach out to what's called Yuan Qi, which is seen as original energy, pure energy. And by using the mind, touching it, and then bringing visualizations back, we can create a Qi field of the inner and the outer becoming the same. So the inner Qi field in human beings, which obviously flows through the Duntians and through the two main vessels in the body, being governing and central, and then spreads out to the yin and yang vessels, to all of the organs and nerves and bones and all of that, right? So the idea is being able to connect to this pure Qi by mind, by practice, and being able to bring it back into environment to create a Qi field, a coherent Qi field that can be around a group of people, an item, and then using particular ancient knowledge, if you like, to bless and tune that and have it be stable.
Right. So interesting. So interesting. And actually, can we go another one further? Because yes. Even before I was fully aware of you and you had come into my own field, I'd already been doing some research myself in regards to keeping fruits and vegetables around copper or underneath a copper pyramid. Because this kind of history of using copper and tuning copper to be protective and helpful and supportive has been around for thousands and thousands of years, and possibly not just in regards to Chinese culture, but also Egypt as well. So can we go down that rabbit hole of the history of the use of copper?
I'm probably not the expert on the history of the use of copper, but I do know that there's three metals that are higher frequency metals that are life positive, right? And they're copper, silver, and gold. Copper is usable because of the fact that it's anti-inflammatory properties and other things by wearing it. So copper bracelets have been used for a long, long time. So therefore, the metals are interesting. They take longer to tune, but they hold information better. For example, we could possibly do the same idea of a coherent Qi field around a plastic pen, but it's not a good quality item, and the chances are it won't hold. But something that's metallic does, and it's not uncommon in the psychic fields where people will say, give me grandma's ring, and let me sort of have a feel of it. And there's vibrations within that. If someone's sensitive, they can feel. So metals tend to be able to hold that for a start. And the three best metals, obviously, are copper, silver, and gold. Now, copper probably has the best health benefits in the body, right? Because we don't want to be ingesting metals into the body too much. We don't, you know, we're dealing with heavy metals as it is most of the time. But I think it's the vibration of copper too. It's life positive. It's friendly to the system. It's not a negative substance. I mean, for example, if we used aluminium or some of those types of substances, they're not life positive. When I say life positive, I mean it doesn't enhance the Qi field. And the way you could describe this is that the Qi field is like a balloon around the body. Things that enhance that will make it feel solid and full, and things that make it deflate are obviously not so good. You know, so for example, you can use that example to test whether it's kinesiology or feeling the Qi field. You could have someone think of being hugged by someone they love, and the Qi field will feel strong, right? Mm-hmm. And if you say, well, think of someone yelling at you, it deflates straight away. So we're that sensitive to this, we may not always feel it, but it's there. And so we want life positive items around us if we can.
I'm curious with that example that you just used of somebody yelling at someone. If somebody's around a negative environment or is having negative thoughts, in the same way that you maybe charge up copper and or, you know, put that kind of energy into something, can you do the same thing with negative energy or bad energy? Or like, can you fill a vessel up or a device up or a crystal up or something with negative energy and then pass it around and essentially everybody absorbs the negativity? And will that negativity dissipate or can it stay within an object or a person?
I think it can stay within objects. One of the demonstrations we did a long time ago with dowsing and with kinesiology was using crystals, which have been used throughout the ages, right? So people use them for healing benefits and other things. But crystals in modern times are amplifiers of energy and they pick up EMFs and negative vibrations quite quickly. Now, crystals can be sealed and protected as well. And I've done a demonstration with two that I've had for 17 years and they're still stable. But generally, if you took a crystal and passed it around a room of sick people, it would come back with quite a negative vibration that it continues to amplify. It can be cleared by shaking it, blowing on it, or having it out in the sunlight or in salt water. There's sort of these methods of clearing crystals. But again, as soon as it's exposed to EMFs or other things, it instantly picks it up again. So it's possible to have crystals done that way as well. It's possible mm-hmm. for them to be stable and have coherent energy just as much as it is for it to have negative energy. And the reason that we have things like the Zenki jewelry is to be an assistant for people. It's never meant to be the guru. It's never meant to be, let me help you walk all through life. It's just to assist us to have more resistance to some of these stresses. And we need it. I mean, we're busy as it is. We're frazzled a lot of the time. We're becoming all the time rather than being. I mean, my stepdad years ago, I was talking to him. I was saying about human beings. He said, they're not human beings, they're human becomings. And what he meant by that in many ways is that we're not here. We're not present. We're not being. We're not sort of in this active state of doing things and taking little bite-sized chunks out of what we need to accomplish and moving mm-hmm. forward in action. And I'm very much about what works right here, right now for me and for those around me if I can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. I like the idea. I like the quote personally, be before you become. As well, in place of the idea of fake it till you make it.
Yes.
It acknowledges that idea of being present, like just be you, you know? And that in itself is the becoming.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's one step. I mean, Lao Tzu, who was the founder of Taoism and, you know, the idea of yin and yang and all of those things, came up with a 1,000-mile journey begins with a single step. Now, for him, that would have been quite a profound statement. It wasn't just an intellectual thing that he was tossing around. He would have felt that in looking at something that seemed insurmountable to accomplish and saying, well, if I just take one step, I can get it done. And this is my attitude to people who are quite ill or stressed, to work with them if we're working in the clinic or if we're educating them in some way in classes or whatever, is to say, just as long as you take one step. I mean, if you look at, for example, wanting to be a marathon runner and saying, how am I going to do sub-5-minute miles, which was the old language, and run 26 miles at that pace, you would give up. But if you knew that you just had to put the shoes on and the gear and get out and run and huff and walk a bit around the block and that's all it took bit after bit, day after day, and just do little bits, they're bite-sized chunks, you can move forward.
Yeah. Yeah, that the old 5-minute mile. And then once it was broken, everybody did it.
Yeah. Yeah. Then maybe there's a mindset in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess they're limitations which we put on ourselves, right? And I think at the time, if I'm remembering correctly, not that I was here at the time, but if I'm remembering history correctly, people used to say that when you did that, your heart would explode. So we had this fear-based, you know, mindset into all of these athletes and these people that are like, oh my God, if you run that fast, your heart will explode and you'll die, you'll have a heart attack. And then once somebody tiptoed over the line and realized they were totally okay, that mindset completely evaporated and wow. People were doing it every week.
I didn't know that people's hearts were going to explode by doing a sub-4-minute or sub-5-minute mile. Roger Bannister, eh? How brave was he?
I know. Risked his heart for all of us.
Oh, for all of us. Good on you. went down in history as the, you know, the savior of mankind.
Well, he hasn't saved me yet because I'm yet to run a sub four
yeah, minute you mile. And me both. You and me both. And I don't think I ever will now. I have no desire to.
I'm curious about, because a lot of people are in, you know, shitty situations, maybe got family members, maybe in relationships, maybe in work environments that are perpetually not great energy, like terrible experiences. And there's obviously a whole conversation to be had about solving that problem by leaving discussions, blah, blah, blah. But my question to you is, in regards to continually getting up or walking into spaces on a daily basis that are negative, what can people do or how can people prepare themselves to be able to be more resilient to that or to change the narrative of that environment?
Well, that's right. I think it's partly the narrative, how we think about things, whether we want to be protected against something or whether we want to change ourselves into being that which emanates the good energy into the environment, rather than saying, well, that environment's negative. Am I assisting that environment by thinking that way or am I perpetuating the negativity? That's part of it, I think, is mindset. Part of it really is no easy path for strengthening energy. I remember in Qigong, for example, in medical Qigong, if there's students that want to go into a cancer ward, they have to have particular preparations to do that because they're saying, if you're not sensitive to that and you walk into that, it's going to affect the quality of your own energy. So there are preparations that need to take place. Now, in everyday life, I would say to people, get out in nature. And you mentioned grounding just quickly in your intro. You're talking about things. Ground, touch a tree, walk in nature, get out, get some fresh air. Do both ends of the beam. I talk about both ends of the beam where we have a seesaw that's going from the yin end to the yang end, which is from being completely exhausted in the extreme, maybe into depression, and the yang end, which is completely overwhelmed and maybe at the extreme end into violence. And the closer we come to the center of that beam, which is this homeostasis, this equilibrium, the more settled we are and the more we're walking hand in hand with life in a way because we're in this state of order, right? So do what we can to manage our own lives, I think, is the key here. Is the Zenki products are designed to assist that, but at the end of the day, too, it's about, are you breathing? Are you regulating your breath? Are you doing something that increases your strength of purpose, whether it's lifting weights or walking up a hill, something that sort of develops your will, the old saying that will begets will? Are you doing something to manage both ends of that first in your life rather than just hoping that you can walk into a room and it'll be better? It's not going to necessarily translate. Be, you know, the old saying, be the change you want to see in the world, right? Well, be that. Be the positive light in that room. You be the change. You say, well, look, it's not that good. We're it's palpable. We know how it feels like when we're in a room full of people that love each other. And we know what it feels like when someone who's all doom and gloom walks into that room, right? So I guess the key in this is the understanding that it's my responsibility. That's how I feel about it, is it's my responsibility to be that light. I can't wait for others to do it. That's not necessarily giving you the answer that a lot might want, which is give me a tool, give me a skill. The skill is to make yourself stronger, you know, calm your farm, you know, calm your spirit, breathe, relax. And if you need to punch a bag, go and punch a bag. But I talk about this with chaos. If we're in this state of chaos, which is being upset or the mind's running away with itself and it can't solve it because chaos can't solve itself in many ways, I say go either end. One is the mindfulness breathing end where you just stop first thing in the morning and you just listen to your breathing and you do this state of nothingness. And one of my Qigong teachers said that this return to nothingness, that nothingness is the best medicine, right? He's talking about this meditation we used to do sitting on hard wooden stools forever, right? And it makes sense. Is this sort of the water coming back to the pool, everything just stopping and being still and having mindfulness. And then the other end of the beam, so that's inclusive. You're in a state of awareness which is inclusive, right? The other end is the exclusive one where you're concentrating in, whether that's lifting a weight or it's walking up a hill saying, I'm going there. It's sort of, and it develops that bead in the eye, that strength, that will. Both of those balancing the beam. You're getting this nice little, you're getting Kane out of Kung Fu series. You're getting the monk on one end and you're getting the warrior on the other. That makes you stronger.
Yeah, I love that. And that sentiment is totally in alignment with everything we talk about on the podcast, which is, you know, personal responsibility, you know, personal empowerment, you know, be the change because nobody's going to change for you, you know, and you can, and sure, some people might come at that conversation and say, well, maybe you're a bit victim blamey. And it's like, okay, sure, you're a victim. Now what? Now what? Like, yeah, right. Yeah. The answer is change.
Yeah. I mean, what choice do you have? I mean, it's very much the standing at the edge of the cliff and saying you've got two choices. You can take in the view or you can jump off, right? So I think choose life, take in the view. It's always maybe some, it can be the harder path, but one of the reasons for, Matty, a podcast like yours with over 300 podcasts is that you have a passion for getting information out there, getting different speakers on here. People have different thoughts and values and having very broad palette of ideas. And hopefully people can draw from that. It's not, what I do is not going to suit everybody. What you do may not suit everybody. But at the end of the day, even if you can take a fraction of out of this, something that benefits, then we've done our job. That's how I feel in life. I say, who did you make smile today? You know, this is my test in a day. Who did I make smile and did I laugh today? And if I didn't do those things, then, well, I need to pick up my socks and get to it, you know.
Well, your socks need to stay right where they are because you've made me smile.
Oh, well, that's fantastic.
So for everybody listening, where can they find you online? Where can they get some Zenkey products? Like, I've got the ring, I've got a bangle. I love them. I sit in front of a computer every day. My life is online. My podcast is online. My business is online. So, you know, it's a priority for me to be protected personally in my life. It's very Wi-Fi, electromagnetic field driven in order for me to make my income. But where can everybody go to find this as well?
Well, Matty, the girls that have been supporting us very much that you've been dealing with too are fantastic. And they gave me a code to give to you, right? So you go to zenkeyenergy.com, which is our website. You go to purchase a bangle, a ring, and you put in Matty10 and you'll get a discount on that. So there's a code for that they can use, if it's okay to say that. And that's a starting place. I mean, the zenkeyenergy.com website is a portal really for people to go to study, to have one-on-ones, to, you know, look at the jewelry and things like that. And we're hoping that it will be a portal for people to come and really enjoy.
Fantastic. I will make sure that all of that information is down in the show notes below. So if you've resonated with anything that Daryl has shared today, or you want to get your hands on some of this Zenkey stuff, then down to the show notes below, scroll down, click the link, pop in Matty10 and save a bit of money there and get your hands on some goods. And I guess before we wrap up, Daryl, it's been fantastic having you here. And I love the way you speak. You have such a perfect podcast voice. So thanks for joining me. Oh. But the final thing was one thing that you wish more people knew about, ideally in the world of health and wellness. And I know there's probably a million that you know, but what is that one thing that you wish more people knew about?
I think connecting, honestly, this sounds so cliche, but it is get into nature and just sort of grab life with both hands, enjoy the beauty. I think people sometimes that are enclosed in their own thinking in the four walls of their house, the walls of their head, I say, get out, get into nature. So that, eat well, make sure you're doing the eight pillars, you know, you're getting fresh air, the fresh water, the sunshine, good food, rest, exercise, laughter, and the eighth one being cultivation, but also giving. So I think the key is do simple things. And if it was anything, I would say have an attitude of gratitude. Because I think gratitude is the number one key in many ways, because it says, I'm sensitive to others and what they have to say. I'm listening to others. I'm beginning to learn. So in being grateful, I think there's fantastic. Have an attitude of gratitude and be in the presence of the present.
Fantastic.
And there's great power in that.
Yes, I totally agree. Thank you so much for being on the show, Daryl. Look forward to having you back in the future and we'll catch you soon.
Thank you very much, Matty, for the opportunity. It's been fantastic, mate. Thanks a lot.
No worries. Thanks, mate. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.